Welcome to part two of our interview with Greg Bakken about the Spirit Box.
When you have those moments of, oh my God, you know, this Spirit Box is able to give us these glimpses essentially into the other side. And we're hearing intelligent responses that we otherwise don't have any other ways to pick up on. Does that make you want to dig further into other ways of communicating or advancing the ways of communicating with a spirit box as far as intelligent back and forth conversation? And have you dug into that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the thing, you know, for way too long, I probably had just been like, well, spirit box, this is great. This is really cool. But the idea was like, yes, how do you communicate with spirits without a spirit box? And I say that in a kind of a silly way, because I bet anyone who's listening out there who is a paranormal investigator, they're probably screaming back at, you know, the computer, like, most of us don't use a spirit box, or if we do use a spirit box, you know, it's not the focus of our investigation.
Sure.
There's a lot, you know, there's a ton of different ways to do it. And for me, I've been really liking to try a lot of, you know, different sort of things. I'm not saying that they are state of the art or that they are stuff that other people haven't thought about, but what is it that we can do that can not only give you spirit communication, but also validate that communication that maybe you get in the spirit box, or the spirit box validates the communication you're getting from some other device, or even like a psychic medium. And those are the things that really interest me. I want to be able, especially with a psychic medium, I love having them tell me what they're picking up and asking the spirit box, hey, is that true? Or K2, like, can you light up if this person is actually talking to you, or something like that? Can you light up the flashlight? Can you give us an EVP, you know, or even what I like to do is hang a bell, you know, from a doorknob and see if something can move the bell or something.
Basically using independent pieces of equipment and seeing if they can all work in tandem with one another to deliver the same sort of results.
I feel like if you're not able to do that sometime, at least that there has to be some kind of discrepancy with what you're picking up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're only picking up something from a spirit box and it's totally anachronistic from anything else that you're getting readings from, then that has to be like a red flag of like, well, what is actually happening here? You know, is that just a fluke? Is something else a fluke? Because, you know, as much as I like a spirit box, you know, you don't want to believe everything that comes from it, because there is a lot of nonsensical stuff that happens. And it's so easy when you're going through, or when you're asking the questions and you just get a blip that's meaningless and you're just like, oh, that was an answer. You know, I've done it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have to really think about what is being said here, and it's to make sense. My rule for spirit box communication has always been, if you get a word that's, you know, two syllables or more, you're doing pretty well, because that means that there has to be something that, you know, is actually saying the name or the word. You know, my name is Greg, so I'm one syllable. So a lot of times I might think I hear my name, I'll go back and listen to it, and what I actually hear is like just a radio blup or something like that. That isn't my name. And that's disappointing. But at the same time, it's like, well, you gotta make sure it's right. You gotta make sure that if you're listening to it, that you really do think it sounds like what you think it sounds like.
Sure. What do you say to those who are very dismissive about the spirit box as being a tool to use in their investigative arsenal? I'm sure you've heard it, but I know there's a lot out there that the term even comes up and it's just like, yeah, it's you know, it's so random. It, you know, this doesn't work. Obviously, you use it quite frequently with success. Yeah. So what is your attitude towards that when you hear that?
My attitude has always been, and you're right, I've gotten it quite a bit. I always tell people, I'm not here to convert you. You know, I'm not here to have you, to make you believe in what I'm believing. You can take it or leave it. You know, all I ask is that if you don't agree with me, that you're respectful about it. You know, you're going to be reasonable about it. You can certainly have your point of view. We can certainly have a debate about it. But people have in the past taken it to a personal level, and it's like, you know what, then it's not worth it, because we're all just trying to figure out what's going on here. You know, I've seen people who put the term expert by their name when they're talking about paranormal, and it's like, there's no experts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I think you're more of an expert once you die, and I firmly believe that that's also just another new beginning of enlightenment personally. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the thing that I really like to put out there is, like, you can certainly hold your opinion, and I'd listen to what people have to say. I mean, I've gotten people who sent me articles on why it's absolutely impossible for spirits to communicate through a spirit box. But I would always, I counter it myself with thinking, I think a lot of people think it's absolutely impossible for spirits to communicate with us at all. So I think we're living in a realm of things that don't have rules. Mm-hmm. That we're living in an area of where if you get spirit communication, I actually feel like that can be almost tandem to a leap of faith, because you might be the only one that message is meant for. It may mean nothing to anyone else, but you know in your heart, you know in your mind that was meant for you, that someone said something to you and it was meaningful. And I think that's the thing that people have to kind of keep in mind, that sometimes, yeah, it's nice that everyone can pick up that the same thing. Sometimes though, also, it's just like, you just know when that message is for you.
Sure. And speaking of rules, when it comes to the spirit box itself and being able to pick up messages, and I guess it's not truly a rule, but more so, I guess, more in the area of commonality. Do you find that there are certain types of hauntings or types of spirits that come through easier than others, whether that be a victim of a tragedy or a sudden death, or someone who just slowly aged out and died in their home a peaceful way? Is there any case or any area where you see a trend going that you're more likely to get activity and coherent activity through the spirit box?
I feel like that is based on the type of questions we ask, and that's just my opinion. And where I'm basing this from is, you know, I'm not very often going into places that have had big, like, death or disaster, that we know of people who've had any sort of traumatic death. I think one of the ones that I've most that are closest to that is, like, when I went to the Vlissca Axe murder house. But as far as, like, when I'm asking the questions, you know, it's kind of like what you said at the top of the show. It's like, we're just going to have a casual conversation. And I think that might be my complete approach to the paranormal, is trying to be casual about it, trying to be like, what would it be to get any spirit to come out and talk with us, you know? And you think about, how can I come across as a respectful person, someone who is hopefully warm and friendly, that kind of, you know, not only wants to get spirits to communicate, but if we're in a group of people, to get those group of people feel comfortable enough to communicate also. So I think the long way of answering your question is that I think what we end up getting most of the time then is people who have just passed and are just kind of wandering through. You know, we get a lot, especially at the events, we get a lot of people, especially if we're in rural areas and stuff, like people who've owned farms, people who worked in general stores, people who have this very unique, just everyday sort of life, you know. And you'll ask them, like, you know, what is it you like to drink? You know, what's your favorite drink when you're alive? And then you get, like, beer or something, said something, or do you like beer or whiskey? And you'll get whiskey. And then you start talking with them about the different types of whiskey and whatnot. And once in a while, we'll get someone who we think that might have had a traumatic end. But generally, we're just getting everyday sort of people. And that's kind of, I guess, the sort of line of questioning that we're giving to the spirits anyway, just to, if at the very least, just to keep them just kind of happy and not freaking them out either.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a situation where when you're communicating through the spirit box, you get responses that are somewhat disturbing? My analogy would be sometimes people, when they're communicating through something like a Ouija board, they think they're communicating with Susie, the little girl who got hit by a bus down the road for weeks and weeks, and then suddenly it turns out that wasn't Susie after all. Have you ever had that sort of a surprise or anything that you go, oh, this wasn't what we were expecting to get when we were communicating?
Absolutely. And to be very honest, I get very skeptical of children coming through the spirit box.
Yeah.
I really do. And that's also where I believe that the intuitiveness comes into play. Also, my friend Nicole and I, we were down at a Masonic lodge in Kentucky, Newport, Kentucky, not far from Bobby Mackey's, actually. And we were there for the night. We're shooting for our web series. We were there, and towards the end of the night, we were down on one of the main levels in one of the side rooms, and we were picking up a child. And suddenly, you know, just right away, it's just like, this doesn't feel right. I mean, why is she here? What's happening? The whole night so far had been pretty dark and pretty stressful, where we've almost kind of were run out of the place, to be very honest. And so at the end here, we're getting this child coming through, asking for help, asking like questions and stuff, and it just didn't feel right. And, you know, I don't know if you even have to be intuitive per se for that. You can kind of just be like, this isn't working. This isn't right. And, you know, the funny thing about what I run into stuff, you ask the question, like, are you really a child? Are you masquerading? And often you get actually a really honest answer. And we did, like, we don't believe that you're a child. Are you actually someone else pretending to be a child? And the response was yes. It's like, well, thank you for your honesty. Yeah. I mean, but it was like, we saw through this. And I don't know what the purpose of this was. I don't know if he was hoping to get some sort of like something from us or whatever, but you know, we saw it, and he might have just been like, yep, gig's up. Yep. I'm not a little girl. In fact, I'm something else. And we don't know what that was, to be honest.
The quick thing that everyone goes to is, oh, it's a demon. But could it just as easily be, just as in real life, people, teenagers and such, do prank phone calls and pretend they're someone that they're not? I suppose if you're dead and you have a sense of humor, I know I would probably do this. I'd pretend to be someone else sometimes. It's like, who is this? Elvis. Oh my God, we got Elvis. It sure is. I'm chowing down on a peanut butter banana sandwich right now. You know, you just start like putting the words peanut butter out there and just shit like that. And then people are like, holy shit, it really is Elvis. And no, it's just me being an asshole. And it's not a demon either. But I could totally see that being a thing too, where someone is pretending to get, you know, a little girl in this case, maybe to get sympathy or to get some sort of attention that maybe they've seen other spirits get. Maybe it's an evidential thing where they've seen other investigators come in, and well, the little girl gets a heck of a lot of attention when they say it's a dead little girl versus me, the 48-year-old man who just smoked too much. You know, there's more sympathy there, so I'm going to say this to get the attention, more of a manipulation thing than it is, you know, a demonic evil, I want to take over your body and cat thing.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And you know, we run into that all the time. You know, they say, if you're a jerk in life, you're going to be a jerk in death. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like you, especially having been a paranormal investigator, when I pass, I don't think I could help myself if, you know, I see some investigators and I, just say the word Lincoln or something, you know, for them to get through the spirit box or something, you know, just really freak some people out. And, you know, that's kind of what I was saying earlier about, you know, the couple times I had asked about celebrities and whatnot, and we got some responses that are very interesting. But at the same time, I mean, come on, how can you possibly, you know, qualify that? How can you possibly say, yep, that's who it is? It's impossible. To be honest, even if you get like your parents or something in there, I mean, there's nothing to say that if my dad came through, that it's really my dad. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And that's, you know, to be very fair though, I mean, once again, going to that intuitive side, hopefully, you know, you just know who it is. But if you're trying to get a hold of Prince And suddenly someone's like, you know, all of a sudden you hear Purple Rain on the spirit box and you're like, oh my God, this is him. It's like, well, maybe, but maybe not.
Maybe we're also just in the Minneapolis area.
Maybe we're just, look, we're outside Paisley Park. Yeah. I guess maybe that might be a thing too. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a thing too. Like, as you know, I mean, it's, we're all as investigators, it's like, sometimes if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And you gotta be a little careful with all that. Just like at Villisca, which I do think for me has been the darkest place that I've ever investigated at. If there's anything that could kind of remotely be considered demonic, I think Villisca for me is where you could go with that. I think that Villisca is the STD of the paranormal community, because everybody goes in there. You know, it all started off with you know, these eight people being murdered by some unknown, you know, murderer with an axe. Mm-hmm. Over years, so many people have come in there to kind of conjure and stuff and not clean the place out, that it's just this very dark and sticky, nasty place. And when I was there, one of my favorite pieces of Spirit Box recording was where I just wanted to know who we're talking to. And suddenly you hear my name on the recording, and it is actually very clear it's Greg. And all of a sudden I asked the question, like, well, you know my name, what is your name? And the response you get is Satan.
Wow.
And I knew immediately, honestly, it's not Satan. Mm-hmm. I knew what the purpose of it was. But at the same time, it's, you know, as an investigator, regardless, and I don't care who you are, regardless if you're just like, you know, I don't buy into that hype, I don't, you know, like to make a big deal. If you get a spirit response that says Satan, I mean, you're going to kind of be like, oh, wow. You know, I mean, you're going, this is pretty cool. I don't care. You're going to kind of be like, yeah, this is really interesting. At the same time, though, it's not Satan. Mm-hmm. Satan's not, you know, trying to talk to Greg. You know, it's not what it is. I don't know. I can't say what it is. What's more chilling about that recording, it's not like someone really darkly is like Satan. It's just like very Satan. That's how it said, Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Very matter of fact, it's really interesting.
Like Satan, let's go get some coffee. Yeah, it is very interesting. But when you have something like that claiming to be this or that, when you're in a situation where it is dark, and dark because it is either something demonic or it is just a people or spirits that were once living that were really just asshole people that are now dead and in this one place, and it would feel really crappy if you're around them in life and probably feels really crappy when you're around them in death, whatever the cause of it may be. When you're in that situation investigating and you're encountering something dark that doesn't want you to be there, as an investigator, what do you do? Do you keep digging once you've come to that conclusion and you realize, yeah, this is pretty dark? Or do you just say, okay, it is dark. I've got my feel. I got my feel of realizing this doesn't feel that great. I'm calling it a day. What is it for you?
It's tough, isn't it? Because there is that understanding. If you ask those questions at an investigation, like, would you like us to leave? And they say yes, either through a K2, a spirit box, flashlight, or whatever. You know, technically, what you should do is pack up your shit and get out. You know, that's the rule. You've asked the question, they answered it. Even if it's like, and you sometimes ask that if it is dark, like it's almost like trying to give you an out. The problem is, because, and I'm not one to go into dark situations, but when you're in it and you're like, boy, what is here? What is actually happening here? What can we see? What can we experience? It's tough to back away and be like, oh, you know what? The price of this admission might be a little too high. You know, it might just be like right now, it seems like you're just in a dark room hearing some cool stuff and you don't know what's going to happen. But then are you okay with the possibility of attachments? Are you okay with something that might be rattling your cage in the middle of the night and kind of giving you this sort of this bizarre sort of feeling and making you feel things that you haven't felt before? And those are things that, you know, you don't always think about at the time you're there. And it really depends on who I'm with. Most of the people that I investigate with, if we're in a dark situation, we might kind of just prod a little bit to see much more, but they'd probably want to head out because it's there's a lot of respectful sort of work going on there. But I think I need to be around those people to stop me from staying, to be very honest, because I am very curious about what is in these situations. I'm very curious about always like, what's the next response going to be? What's the next thing that's going to happen that's going to blow our minds? And the, you know, that's kind of the hunger I have as an investigator, I guess, that I am curious about these, what's happening, whether it's, you know, good stuff or stuff that might be a little bit questionable. You know, that's why I ended up going to like places like Villisca and other couple places that maybe we shouldn't have gone. But at the same time, it's like, well, what's there? What is really there? And is it really as bad as people tell us? Maybe it isn't. And that's the sort of thing that kind of drives me a little bit.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Greg Bakken about the spirit box. Be sure to check out Greg's website, mn-ghostbox.org. That is the site of his paranormal group, Minnesota Ghost Box. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.